Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, the topics today are, we're going to look at the preliminary report that just came out for the third quarter. In other words, July through September, U.S. Gross Domestic Product, GDP. A flawed, but nonetheless, the only really available measure of how the economy is doing, the U.S. economy, which we know is running into some problems here. You hear a lot, I'm sure, about supply chains and so forth. All right, we're going to dissect that and see what it represents going forward. And I also want to talk a second topic here about new proposals that were released or leaked to the media this week, a couple days ago, from the Democrat Finance and Ways and Means Tax Committees in Congress. I believe it was the Senate Finance Committee. I'm not sure whether it's Senate or Ways and Means, which is the House Tax Committee, on the billionaires' tax. Let's look at what is that, the billionaire's tax, and how that plays into the latest phase of the circus going on in Congress with regard to the Build Back Better bill. In other words, this piece of legislation that is supposed to boost the economy, supposed to be the stimulus, the human infrastructure. A lot of maneuvering going on there in Congress. I think we're at the end game of that, and it's not a pretty end game. So we'll talk about that in relationship to the billionaires tax, right? Billionaires, you know, the tax that they're supposed to levy or thinking about levying on guys like Elon Musk, who virtually pays no taxes, no taxes. Why? Why does he pay no taxes? Because he takes no salary. He gets no pay, no wages, no salary, right? And, of course, we don't tax the increased valuation of all his stock, which makes him, his total assets, about $300 billion. One guy has total assets of $300 billion, but we don't tax his assets, the value of his stocks and investments, you see, as long as he doesn't cash them in. Oh, well, how does he make some money in the meantime? How does he pay his bills? He doesn't have any salary. Well, I'll tell you how he and these other super rich guys do it. They take out loans from their companies. Instead of getting a pay, they get a loan. I don't know what the interest rate is, but it must be pretty damn small. Yeah, that's how he gets paid. You don't pay taxes on loans, on money you borrow. You pay taxes on money you earn. Earned income, which is wages and salaries, right? So, you know, we got three elements here. That the rich manipulate. There's wages and salaries, right? Which is what the tax code taxes, you and I get, right? And then there are these loans, which aren't taxed at all. Mm-hmm. And then there are the values of their assets, right? Their stocks, their bonds, financial assets, physical assets. They don't pay anything until they cash it in. And if they do cash it in, they pay a much lower rate on what's called capital gains than you and I pay on our wages. You see, well, that's why these guys are amassing trillions of dollars. That's why. Well, this billionaire's tax is supposed to address that wealth. You know, the assets, the value of your assets is your wealth. Wealth generates income. The more assets and wealth you have, the more income you can throw off. Important distinction, wealth, right, versus income. Income is a flow of money, right? Assets are, as economists say, a stock, a value, you know, an amount, a stock. But it's the income that's the flow. Well, we tax income since 1913, when we finally legislated an income tax, corporate and individual, because the U.S. knew it was going into a world war, you see, World War I. It knew that, and it had to retool its military. So where was it going to get the money from? Well, average workers were almost at subsistence. No unions to speak of, and pay was like 10 cents an hour. Well, you weren't going to get the money to push and provide for investments for your new imperial system from the working class. They didn't have it. Where were you going to get it? Well, you had to get it from the rich, right? So that's how the income tax was born, because, you know, the world almost went to war in 1912, and it was pretty obvious that it was coming in Europe, and the U.S. wanted to prepare for it. So it had to raise a new form of tax, you see. It learned its lesson from the War of 1898, you know, against Spain, when the U.S. took over the Philippines and took over much of the Caribbean. In other words, the old leftover colonies of Spain, War of 1898. How did U.S. pay for that? Well, very poorly. It levied different kind of property taxes very unevenly on the wealthy, and it caused a big stink. The wealthy, you know, were very discontent because it was not a across-the-board tax that an income tax would be, you see. It was very spotty here and there. Some wealthy people paid more than others. So that led in the following decade, to continue a little history lesson here, that led in the following decade after 1898 to a lot of discussion about, you know, if we ever have to go to war again, how the hell are we going to pay for it? Well, that's why the corporate and personal income tax finally got passed right before World War I. The United States of America was on the cusp of being a major imperial power. It already was imperialist. It conquered the whole continent. You know, it beat back Mexico, took money from or took land from them, right? It threw the Native Americans onto these little enclaves called reservations, right? Took over the whole continental United States. And then it started expanding out into the Pacific, grabbing territories out there in the islands, Hawaiian Islands and other islands there. You know, this was part of the lead up to the Spanish-American War, 1898. And then it grabbed the Philippines from Spain. And also islands out there, Guam and others. You know, the United States became a Pacific power after 1898. But it had problems funding its military complex. That's why the income tax was passed. And the income tax paid for much of World War I, along with what were called liberty bonds, borrowing. So that's the origin. But it's an income tax. It's not a wealth tax, you see. Wealth means the value of your assets, your stocks, your bonds, you know, your other financial securities, your real property, you know, homes, etc., your business, which is a real property, and also a stock valuation. So to get back to our friend Elon Musk, you know, he and his other billionaires have figured out how to avoid the income tax. You just don't get any pay, no salary. Or like Steve Jobs had $1 a year from Apple, right? They all do this. They borrow money, probably at virtually nil interest rates, from their own company. You see, that's their income, their cash flow, right? But there's no taxes on that. At the same time, there's no taxes on the wealth accumulation, the stocks and the bonds. There's no taxes on that. Well, this billionaire's tax, right, is raising the possibility that they're going to go and tax the year-to-year accumulation of the value of their financial assets, their stocks and bonds, etc. They're going to tax that as it changes year to year, a wealth tax. Well, there's no provision for that in the tax code. There's provisions for income tax, but not a wealth tax. And it took a constitutional amendment to clear the way for the income tax in 1913. A constitutional amendment. The 16th Amendment to the Constitution was necessary in order for Congress to then legislate the income tax. Now, 16th Amendment. Of course, you need 3/4 of the states, right? Well, what do you think is going to happen as they try to raise the wealth tax? Well, you know, guys on billionaires, you know, well, guys like Elon Musk and others are going to take their trillions of dollars of wealth, and guess what they're going to do with it? They're going to tie this thing up in the courts. And when they think it's the right time, with a Trump court, right, 6-3 Supreme Court, right, they'll take it to the Supreme Court and they'll have it rule on the constitutionality of the billionaire's wealth tax. And guess what's going to happen? Oh, I'll predict, I'll give you odds. The court will say, well, we need another amendment to the Constitution before we can implement a wealth tax, just as we did with the precedent of the income tax. Took an amendment to the Constitution. Well, do you really think we're going to see a billionaire's tax anytime soon? No. Not a chance in hell. Well, why the hell are they bringing this up in Congress? Right, as something real to pay for Build Back Better, which is under the knife, right, is being slashed and cut day to day. Well, wait a minute. Doesn't the Democrats and Biden been saying, even before this talk of the billionaire's tax, weren't they saying that, hey, this thing is all paid for with tax increases? The Build Back Better is all paid for, right? No deficit. Yeah, they've been saying that all along. Well, they've been saying it all along because they had proposals on the table to pay for it by raising taxes, income taxes, on corporations and wealthy investors and individuals. That was there in the Build Back Better. Well, it ain't there no more. No, no. What were these measures? Well, one measure was to raise back the corporate income tax from its current 21% back to 26%, which isn't even halfway to where it was at 35% before Trump cut it from 35 to 21%. He cut the corporate income tax 35 to 21%. What a massive cut for corporations. Massive. And there were a lot of other measures under the Trump tax cut, too. Well, Biden says, I'm going to raise it back up to 26. Actually, he said 28 when he's running for election. And then it became 26. And then it became something else, 25. You know, they kept it going down. So, that was one measure. That's off the table now. The corporate income tax, partial reversal of the Trump tax cuts, is off the table. What's also off the table was the proposal to raise the individual income tax top rate back up to 39%. Trump had cut it to about 37, I think. Okay, so they're going to raise it two percentage points and generate some income there. Well, that's off the table too. Well, wait a minute. If the two main ways of raising taxes to pay for Build Back Better no longer exist, how are they going to fund it? Well, They just keep reducing the amount of spending, so they have to fund even less. That's been going on. You know, started out $3.5 trillion, now it's $1.75 trillion. Actually, I think it's about 1.5, because Manchin just this, you know, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, you know, the shill for the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, just demanded. The initial proposal in the Build Back Better was to provide 12 weeks of paid leave, you know, which was the minimal that other European countries were providing. 12 weeks. Well, they drove that back to 4 weeks. Manchin says, "Oh, I can't just, I can't, you know, agree to this." So they took that off the table. Well, you know, that's going to reduce to 1.75, I think. Manchin's position is 1.5, but, you know, what he wants in that 1.5 is different than what the progressives want, right? There was $150 billion in the Build Back Better bill to provide alternative energy electricity driven, you know, get rid of the coal-fired plants out there throughout the country. Coal-fired, right? Well, Mr. Coal, now, Joe Manchin, got them to agree to drop that. And guess where that $150 billion going? It's going to a tax cut for coal companies. That's where it's going. So instead of reducing coal and alternative energy, we're going to use that money to give him a big, well, they're trying to buy his vote. Well, he took the money, said, but it's not enough. I want other changes too. And that's what's going on, you see. Neither Manchin nor, you know, the other corporate shill there, Kristen Sinema from Arizona, big pharma shill, by the way, because a lot of pharmaceuticals produced in Arizona, you see. You know, neither him, neither Manchin nor Sinema really negotiate. They're not saying what their position is. It's just less and less and less. It keeps changing. You know? It's like saying they're not even moving the goalposts, to use a metaphor. They won't even let the goalpost on the field. They won't say what their position is, so it's easy for them to keep backtracking. You know, and the progressives well, I think Biden's in the pocket with these guys. But, you know, the progressives keep making concessions. You know, from $3.5 trillion down to 1.75 or less, as they keep making concessions. Well, that's a dumbass way to negotiate, you know, to keep moving. As long as you keep moving by yourself and your positions, the other side is going to say, hey, we'll keep it up, boys. I like to negotiate this way. You know, I'm not going to make a counteroffer if you keep making offers on offers. Keep it up. You're signaling to me you're willing to keep moving. Well, I don't know how far I can push you. Well, just keep doing it. That's the reality of the negotiations on this thing. You know, the progressives would keep trusting these guys, and they're getting outmaneuvered and outnegotiated by the corporate wing. Look, Sinema and Manchin are the point persons for the corporate wing of the Democratic Party who don't want to reverse the Trump tax cuts any more than Mitch McConnell does. That's the reality. And you don't hear much about that in the mainstream media, do you? Or you hear even less about the thousands of additional corporate lobbyists running around Washington now during these negotiations, thousands of them, in addition to the thousands are already there. Doing what? Trying to ensure the taxes aren't raised on their corporations. Look, you know, in the 1990s, the catchphrase was, it's the economy, stupid, right? Remember that? Well, the catchphrase today is, it's the tax cuts, stupid. In particular, the Trump tax cuts. That's what this is all about. Corporations and their representatives in Congress, led by on point here, the shills of Manchin and Sinema, prevent these tax hike reversals. prevent it? Well, the best way to prevent it is just to cut the spending down, down, down. And get it low enough so you can engage in smoke and mirrors funding of this Build Back Better bill, just as they did with the infrastructure bill. The infrastructure bill started out in February as $2.3 trillion in new spending on infrastructure. What did Biden do? Well, he took a lot of it out, particularly the climate, and threw it into the Build Back Better package, you see. And then he slashed further infrastructure, and then he threw in infrastructure spending already authorized before all these negotiations for the highway bill that was already there to get it to $1.1 trillion. Well, if you took out the already authorized, it's really only $550 billion in new spending in the infrastructure bill, which means you can pay for that somehow $50 billion a year over 10 years through smoke and mirrors, moving money around the government slush funds. And that's how they pay for the infrastructure bill. I predicted last July that the same thing was going to happen with Build Back Better at $3.5 trillion. They would slash that down to a workable number where they didn't have to raise taxes, you know, and they can move the money around these different pots they got in the government to fund it. Well, you know, at $1.75 or even $1.5 trillion, the pot is still too big, you see, just to move the money around. They got to come up with some kind of taxes. But wait a minute, they don't want to raise taxes on corporations and the wealthy. They took that out. Well, then they got to come up with the bullshit billionaires tax, which is bullshit. I'll tell you why. It's not workable, and they know it. And I'm not just talking about the question that you'll need a constitutional amendment or that it'll take years to get through the Supreme Court before that decision comes down. I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about how the billionaire's tax works on its face, how it's supposed to work on its face. Well, here's a little bit of a critique. By the way, I just wrote a piece that's appeared in a number of blogs on the billionaire's tax. And on this 15% corporate minimum, alternative minimum tax. Those two measures are coming out of the tax committees now, and they're designed to replace the real tax hikes, the real reversal of the Trump tax hikes, to pay for Build Back Better. As Build Back Better spending, you know, shrinks, right? They got to come up with tax. Well, if they take out the real taxes, they got to come up with some bullshit taxes, right? Well, what's bubbling now, of course, is the billionaire's tax and the 15% minimum alternative corporate tax. Let's talk about those. And then we'll get to third quarter GDP. I was going to do it the other way around, but I just got going here on this tax. So let's just continue. All right. What about the billionaire's tax? Okay. What can we say about the billionaire's tax? Well, from what we know, you know, there's 745 billionaires in this country, the number rising all the time, right? Most of their wealth because the stock market and other financial markets are at bubble levels. Huge appreciation in the value of their wealth, their financial assets, right? Well, the billionaire's tax will apply to billionaires, not because they got $1 billion in assets, right? They have to have that first, at least $1 billion in assets, in wealth. But that wealth has to generate at least $100 million a year for three consecutive years. Okay, so not all the 745 billionaires are going to be hit by this. We don't know how many of them will be hit by this, right? But $100 million in annual income. Well, if I'm Elon Musk and I don't have an income, I'm borrowing money. My company has given me loans every year. Where am I going to get $100 million in annual income? I have to sell some of my stock, right? And pay some capital gains. The capital gains would generate income. Oh, well, what do I do? Well, one of those 3 years, I just don't do that, you see, because I got to have $100 million in annual income each of 3 consecutive years to qualify for the billionaire's tax. Well, think about it. You think they can't figure out how to maneuver around that one? You betcha. That'll be easy, right? I just don't show more than $99 million in income in one of the 3 years, and I break that chain. Right. Well, what about the $1 billion in assets, right? How does the government know you got $1 billion in assets? Well, you got to tell them. You think they're going to tell them? Right? What about assets that are offshore? You know, in tax havens or in some country that doesn't share its data with the Internal Revenue Service, and there's many of those countries that don't. Right? How do you determine that they even have the $1 billion to qualify for the $100 million a year for 3 consecutive years income flow? How do you know that? How will IRS obtain that data? You know, that's parked in tax havens, right? Like Cayman Islands or Bermuda or Isle of Man in Europe or Vanuatu in the South Pacific, right? Or scores of these tax havens around the world where the very rich stuff their income, right? It's going to be very hard to figure out, you know, whether they got $100 million in income. What kind of income are we talking about? Salary? Interest? Rent? Capital gains? Right? What about income from opaque derivatives that they don't know about? Right? Or from unreported cryptocurrency appreciation? You know, they just may move their money and their income flow into cryptos, right? And what about all the exemptions that certainly will proliferate in any legislation for a billionaire's tax, right? Most importantly here, what kind of 3-year period are we talking about, right? Are we talking about taking effect in 2022, which is likely? They never do this stuff on taxes under rich retroactive, right? Okay, so it takes effect in 2022. Well, then we're going to have to wait to 2025, 3 consecutive years, just to see who can qualify for the billionaire's tax. And what happens if their assets drop from $1 billion in any one of those 3 years? What do you do then? You start all over, right? And also, this tax is a one-time levy, as I understand it. In other words, we're going to hit the billionaires once. That's it. Once you get hit by it, you don't pay it again, ever. I think that's what it says. That's what I read, right? Look, this is a marketing ploy. This is a marketing by the Democrats to make it look they're going after the big boys, right? You pay nothing, right? And that's how they're going to fund the Build Back Better, because they're letting all the other capitalists off the hook with a corporate income tax and a personal income tax. Yeah, they're letting them off the hook, the income tax, right? And we're going to go after a handful of these guys. Well, you're not going to get the handful for all the reasons I've just indicated. Yeah. How the hell do you figure $100 million in 3 consecutive years? And if they break any one of those years through manipulating the tax code, which they do very well, you know, they're not liable for any of that tax. It's going to be a zoo. trying to get these guys to pay anything. Not going to work. And then, you know, the big safety valve for them is the fact that they'll tie it all up in the courts for years, and then the Supreme Court will say, ah, you need another constitutional amendment to tax wealth. Yeah, that's the scenario we're facing with this phony billionaires tax. Phony. It's all smoke and mirrors, as I said in my article, the smoke and mirrors billionaires tax. Yeah, check out my blog, jackrasmus.com. Or you can check out a number of public blogs, you know, Znet, Counterpunch, whatever. They carry this stuff too. But go to my blog and read the article. Now, the article also addresses this companion tax provision called the 15% corporate minimum tax, right? In other words, corporations have to pay at least 15% if they paid nothing at all, you know, which they're doing now. So many of them are just manipulating the tax code and they're not paying any corporate income tax. You know, companies like Jeff Bezos' Amazon 2018 paid no tax, making billions of dollars every year, paid no tax. Yeah. Or all these pharmaceutical companies, what do? They move their headquarters to Ireland, right? Or to Luxembourg or places like that. Where they pay 2 or 3% tax. You know, their headquarters are there. All the production is in the United States, but because they record their profits at their headquarters level, they pay the 2 or 3% tax, and they don't pay Uncle Sam. Yeah. That's called inversions, you see. That's a big loophole, tax inversions. You know, that became an issue under Obama, but Obama did diddle about it. Oh, he tried, and then he got pushed back, and he quickly dropped it all, like so much else that Obama did or didn't do. Okay, so we got this proposal, 15% alternative minimum. They got to pay at least that, corporations. Now, we're not talking about billionaires. We're talking about corporations. But, you know, it is corporations. I believe the corporations have to have, to qualify for this, $1 billion in profits every year. $1 billion in profits. Well, there's not too many companies that have $1 billion in profits. They have billions of dollars in revenue, sales revenue. But because you pay a tax on profits, they figure out ways of reducing their bottom line profits numbers in their balance sheets, profit and loss statements, so they minimize their taxes. There's all kind of ways of doing that. You know, you just take some of the revenue and you put it in an investment fund, or you take some of it and you put it in stocks and bonds, or you overestimate interest deductions. There's all kinds of ways to reduce your profit level in a big company to show fewer profits than you're actually making, you see. Okay, so, you know, those who have have $1 billion in profits are going to reduce their profit level and they won't qualify. Well, even the Senate Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden says, oh, this will only apply to a couple hundred companies, you know. Once again, it's a good marketing ploy because it says, oh, we're going to go after the billionaires. In this case, the billionaire companies, not the billionaire individuals. Right? You know, people like to go after the billionaires, make them pay their fair share, because neither the individuals nor the companies, billionaires, are paying their fair share. Okay, so let's go after them. Well, the 15% minimum tax only will apply to a couple hundred companies. The individual billionaires tax will probably apply to far fewer than that. Right? Okay, so they got to make $1 billion, these companies. But it's not clear if it's $1 billion every year or $1 billion over 3 years. You see the parallels between these two measures, right? The smoke and mirrors are not dissimilar in both cases. Right? So, let's assume it's $1 billion over 3 years on an average, not $1 billion every year. If it's $1 billion every year, it'd be easy to get around it. Right? Just like it's going to be easy for the billionaire individuals to get around it if it's $1 billion every year, right? But this is $1 billion in profits, not $1 billion in wealth. You see, the billionaire individual billionaire's tax, you have to have $1 billion in wealth accumulation. Here, for the corporations, it's $1 billion in profits. Profits are a flow, right? Wealth is the stock, as we say in economics, right? You don't have the issue, if you're taxing alternative minimum tax, is it wealth, and therefore you need a new constitutional amendment. No, you don't have that with the alternative 15% tax. It's income, profits. Profits are income, right? But you still have a lot of the same issues. In other words, companies are very adept at shielding their profits, diverting them to offshore subsidiaries through changing the internal pricing structure between their subsidiaries, right? Or hiding them in offshore tax shelters, or allocating them to internal slush funds, you know, as I've talked about. Right? And how are we defining profits here? Is this pre- or after-tax profits? Is it profits from interest, rent, or sales of goods and services? What about financial portfolio profits from the company investing in stocks and bonds and derivatives? You know, these big multinational corporations, at least a third of their income now comes from financial asset investment in stocks and bonds. Are we talking about profits from those financial assets, right? Or just profits from the sale of goods and services? Plus, you know, U.S. corporations enjoy what is called loss carry forward. They have for decades. What is this? Well, if you've had losses in certain years, you can get a tax refund from the years previously when you paid taxes on your profits, right? In other words, you paid taxes 3 years ago, but you had losses in 2020, so you tell that to the government, and the government gives you back the taxes on your profits you paid 3 years ago. That's called loss carry forward. Nice provision, isn't it? Yeah. Well, how does that apply here to the $1 billion in profits qualifying for 3 years, probably consecutive years as well, right? How does that apply? Well, that's a source of big manipulation, I think. Now, you got to understand this 15% alternative minimum tax was in the U.S. tax code for decades. Trump took it out. He eliminated it altogether in 2017. There was no alternative minimum tax under Trump for the first time. Well, the Democrats are bringing it back, for a couple hundred companies, that's all. And there's millions of corporations, you know, hundreds of thousands that had to pay an alternative minimum tax before, and after 2017 didn't. Well, they're still off the hook, you see. It's only a couple hundred companies. It's only those that have $1 billion in profits that will have to pay. And as Wyden said, Ron Wyden, Democrat Finance Committee, maybe a couple hundred companies will be liable for this. Yeah. So, bringing back what? You know, just a small element of what they used to pay. This is all smoke and mirrors, you know? Really, when you look at the details of how these two taxes would work, alternative minimum tax on corporations 15%, and at the same time, the billionaire, individual billionaire's tax, you know, the way it's written, very easy to get for billionaires to get around it. You know, both billionaire corporations and billionaires like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and those guys. Oh, but it makes a good media hype, doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, we're going to pay for this Build Back Better by going after the billionaires. It's a good idea. I mean, how can you not be for taxing those SOBs, right? Who get away with virtually paying nothing. How can you not be? Yeah, I'm for billionaires tax. But look at the way that they are constructing it, you know, with these loopholes big enough to drive a truck through. That's the game, you see? That's the game. They got to come up with something and some phony smoke and mirror number, right, to say they're paying for Build Back Better because they're really stripping out the real tax hikes that would have paid for Build Back Better. That's the bottom line. So the shell game goes on. You know, the Democrats are right in the middle of this playing this shell game. It goes on. And as I said, it's all about the tax cuts, stupid. The Trump tax cuts, of course. And that's why Sinema and that's why Manchin are demanding less and less spending in the Build Back Better. Slash it, cut it, gut it, right? And where are the progressives? Oh, the progressives are negotiating down, 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 unilaterally, without any counters. You know, if they negotiated my union contract, I'd throw them out, vote them out. You know, these guys don't know what the hell they're doing, you know? They're out of their league. The corporate clever ones are manipulating them right and left. Well, it's kind of hard for them, I guess, to really do anything because they're such a minority voice in the wilderness in the Democratic Party. Do you think they're going to be allowed to get their way? No. The corporate wing runs that party. It has ever since Bill Clinton. It was always a player in the Democratic Party, which was a coalition of interests, right? But when Bill Clinton came in, they had taken control of the party. You see, the corporate wing functioned under this faction group called the Democratic Leadership Conference in the early 90s. And the DLC was all the corporate money, the big money, you know? And they took over that party with their boy, Clinton. And they haven't relinquished it ever since. And anyone who has given any indication that they would try was given the deep six. You know, pretty much marginalized them. Yeah, we want you progressives, you know, under the tent, but don't think you're going to really call the shots, right? Bernie, you stay with us, right? And keep that left wing voting for us, right? We'll throw you some crumbs, but don't think, you know, that we're ever going to let you be the candidate, and don't think we're ever going to let your program be the primary program. We'll talk the talk. You know, that's what Biden did during the election. It was Sanders' program. Well, that's how he convinced, you know, the rest of the party to, and Sanders, to let him be the candidate, you see. They weren't about to let Sanders be the candidate. They had stopped him in 2020, and they stopped him again before that. Oh, and they let him be the head of the budget committee, you see, where he could press his program, right? Well, we see what's happening to his program, right? Just what happened to him during the elections. And what happened to him when he tried to change the platform of the Democratic Party was totally outmaneuvered and defeated there, you know. They got control of that organization. They, meaning the corporate wing and all the big contributors, and they're not going to let any real Democratic program prevail. They're cutting it, slashing it, slashing it. And they're using Sinema and Manchin to do it. You see? And what's going to happen? I'm going to make a prediction here. Soon, I believe, the Progressive Caucus is going to agree to the $1.75 or $1.5 trillion. They're going to agree to it. Now, they're going to take a few crumbs. They're going to agree to it so long as they keep putting it to a simultaneous vote of the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill. You see, the corporate interests, the Manchins, and so forth, what they want is to break out the two votes, you see, because once you vote up the infrastructure bill, which is money that goes to businesses, see, once you vote that up, well, then there's no leverage to pass the Build Back Better bill, and they know it. So they want to break out the votes. You see, Pelosi had given an assurance over the summer to Sanders and the Progressive Caucus that they would vote them both at the same time. In other words, the Senate would have to vote up the Build Back Better bill before they the House, voted on the infrastructure bill. In other words, the voting was linked in both. That was the deal. Right? Well, Nancy's going to break that deal very soon. She almost did a week or so ago. Yeah, almost did. But she knew there was still some room to negotiate. Of course, it negotiated down. so she didn't. But now she's going to do it. They're going to break it out. They're going to vote. Well, the progressives have said, okay, you know, we will agree to 1.5, but we're not going to agree. Our only issue on the table still is you got to vote them both together. That's all they're demanding right now. They've agreed, the progressives have agreed to take out, you know, community college, free community college. They've agreed to take out all the leave, you know, paid leave. They've agreed not to have Medicare provide dental benefits. They've agreed not to allow the government, the provision where the government, Medicare, could negotiate with big pharmaceutical companies to reduce the price of the cost to folks of their drugs, right? Like every other country does with the same pharmaceutical companies. They've agreed to take that out. They've agreed to take out the $150 billion for paying, you know, to change out the coal-fired plants. They've agreed to cut just about everything. You know, all that's left there of any import is to continue the child care payments, tax credits for another year only, see? Once the Republicans take over Congress in 2022, then they'll stop that. They won't continue that, the child care payments, you see? So, okay, we'll agree for one more year for that, right? We'll agree through pre-kindergarten education, you know, that's in there. We'll agree to some of the measures for climate change investment, because that's money that'll go mostly to businesses. And we'll agree to that, including the $150 billion tax cut for the coal companies. Right? We'll agree to that. And there's a few other odds and ends in there. Right? But it's not very much. It's not very much. And that's where we are. That's where we are. They will agree to accept the $1.5 trillion if they can get simultaneous vote, because they just don't trust Sinema and Manchin, rightfully so. You know, those two will sandbag them one more time, right? Because they want to eliminate the thing altogether, you see. They really don't believe that any of that spending is necessary because they believe the economy is doing good. Well, let's turn to that. Is the economy doing so good? All right. Well, the numbers, preliminary numbers for GDP came out for the third quarter, July through September. And what do they really show? Well, they show that the economy is slowing down dramatically in the third quarter. And it's not all because of supply chain issues. No, they want you to believe it's all, we just can't get this stuff through the LA ports. No. Look, goods production is only 20% of the U.S. GDP, the economy. 12% is, you know, durable goods, and another 7-8% is housing, residential housing. You know, that's 20%. It's mostly a services economy. 80% is services. So supply chain only affects goods coming in from Asia. And yeah, there is a problem there all along the supply chain, by the way. Simply getting an L.A. Long Beach port to function on 24/7 that Biden said in his town hall isn't going to change anything, because you got to get the whole chain functioning on 24/7. And corporations in the chain simply don't want to pay the wages that would be double time and time and a half for workers. They don't want to do that because that will mean the end of their profits. Yeah. Okay, so that's another issue here. But the point is it's goods and services. Well, let's look at GDP. GDP for the third quarter increased at a 2% annual rate. Annual. They always report in the U.S. annual rate. In other words, the economy really grew in the third quarter over the second quarter by 0.5%, 0.5%, which if you multiply that by four quarters in a year will give you the 2% annual rate. It's not a 2% growth rate. In fact, it's a 0.5% growth rate. Compared to what? Well, in the second quarter, the previous quarter, April to June, the annual rate was 6.7%. Not 2%, 6.7%. Or if you look quarter to quarter, you know, maybe 1.5% growth quarter to quarter, second quarter compared to the first quarter. Okay, so we go from 1.5% quarter to quarter, now down to 0.5% in the third quarter. Well, that's like a two-thirds slowdown in the growth of the economy. Third quarter is a big slowdown. Yeah. Will that continue into the fourth quarter? Well, we're going to have the supply chain problem, so it's going to continue to impact goods, durable goods, and so forth. Housing is slowing down because the prices are so high. People just can't buy them anymore. And that's going to continue to slow because interest rates and mortgage rates are going up. So the slowdown in housing, right, which in September, new home sales, new homes, that's construction. You see, because reselling your house, refinancing, it does not calculate towards GDP. You know, they don't count used goods resold as part of GDP. It's got to be new goods, right? So new home sales are down 17% year on year. 17%, right? About 250,000 fewer homes in September compared to January, right? Of course, just because the median price is going through the roof, right? New home prices about 20% year on year increase in price. Well, only the wealthy can buy new homes, really. Okay, so that 20% of goods production, housing, and, of course, goods are impacted by the supply chain problems, which are going to last for another 9 months. So forget that. It's boosting the economy, right? Another big problem that we've got is exports over imports. You know, if you export more than you import, that adds to GDP. But you import more than export, that subtracts from GDP. Well, we got a big trade deficit and a big subtraction from GDP, and that's going to continue. Because the rest of the world is slowing even faster than the United States. Okay, so forget net exports contribution to GDP, right? Forget goods production because of the supply chain. Forget housing. That leaves services, you know, which is the rest of the economy. And a big component there is consumer service consumption of services. Okay, so that opened up You know, people went back when he opened the economy in the spring and started buying services, right? They went entertainment, you know, they went to restaurants, they traveled a little bit more and so forth. So services increased, no doubt. But the third quarter is far less than the second quarter increase in services. The second quarter, April to June, increased at a 12% consumption. 12%. And consumption is two-thirds of the economy. 12% annual rate in the second quarter. This quarter, much less. Much less. It's slowing down. Right? And in fact, in September, you know, it was only 0.6% increase in consumer spending. In August, it was 1%. Right? So consumer spending is slowing down. On services. Yeah. That's not so good. More importantly, consumer confidence has taken a big plunge. As inflation rises, right, has a big effect. As unemployment and jobs, you know, the great strike of 2021, people aren't returning to their work, occurs. Consumer confidence has dropped every month over the summer, especially expectations of consumers of inflation, you see. That's way up, the highest in 13 years. Consumers expect more and more inflation. Well, you expect more inflation, two things happen, right? One, some people jump in and buy the stuff before the price goes higher, and that's what's happening, and that's part of the third quarter, even though the third quarter is weak, that's part of it. They jump in and they buy now, which causes more demand and more inflation, by the way. But a lot of them just sort of batten down the hatches and say, no, you know, inflation's coming. We can't spend. We got to watch our expenditures. And what about inflation? Where is it hitting hardest? Well, it's hitting working folks hardest. Rents. Well, officially, rents are up 6%. I think they're up double digit. Over 10% because of the way they calculate it. But even at 6%, it's the highest 6% year on year, the highest in 20 years rent inflation, right? Oil, crude oil prices up 70%, 12% just last month in October, meaning energy prices for the consumer went up 25% in October alone. Food prices up all kinds. Food and energy, right? Consumer price index, 5.4% year on year in September. In other words, compared to the previous September, 5.4%. I think it's closer to double digit, 10%, for reasons I talked about on the show and will talk about once again, right? So the inflation is digging deep into consumer spending. You know, it's boosting some of it, but it's really slowing down the rest of it. Right? And that's why we see consumer spending, two-thirds of the economy, plus the supply chain problems occurring for goods. That's why we see only a 2% annual growth rate in the third quarter compared to 6.7 in the second quarter, which means only one half of 1% real growth in 3 months in the total U.S. economy. What's going to happen next quarter? Well, that will be the real determinant here. But we know interest rates are rising, so that's going to slow things down. We know more supply chain problems. We know more inflation. We know people's income has been cut because of no rent assistance, unemployment benefits. I don't see where this economy is taking off. This economy is slowing down once again. Okay, that's my report on GDP, and we'll keep following this. These numbers are just preliminary. They'll be revised here in a month or so. Okay, that's it for today.